Thursday, June 21st, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Well, apologies for my absence. I've been dealing with some pretty intense manipulation or potentially, you know, glitches, however you want to look at it. I actually had a show completely done and ready to go up yesterday. But, you know, long story short, from issues with the internet to the file simply just disappearing, I no longer have the show to share with you. So it's interesting to see how these things continue to increase. One thing which I'll touch on today in general is just intense increase in censorship and suppression of exactly this kind of forum, you know, speaking truth, questioning the establishment narrative. Even going back to my interview I just conducted with Vanessa Beely, having issues simply being able to upload the file on YouTube or other type of mediums where we're trying to share the content. On a side note, I highly recommend you check out the interview I just did with Vanessa Beely. It was, you know, she's fantastic as always and drops a lot of great information for what's going on around the world, not just inside the United States, but things that are being done as a, you know, as in our names around the world through the United States. But in general, been dealing with that kind of manipulation. So apologies for my couple day absence here. It was quite frustrating yesterday because I had a lot of great information that I dropped that really just kind of lost into the ether. So I'll continue. There's a lot of stuff I'm going to go over today, a lot of which I'm just going to quickly touch over because I'm trying to include the things that I missed from the other show as well as stuff that I want to talk about today. But I'll try to keep it around the same time frame. But a lot of the points yesterday were revolving around the kind of just extreme, you know, all-encompassing immigration topics that were being forced into our consciousness, as well as the FBI IG report, which I've constantly pointed out is simply, it's a very important, very real thing for us to be involved in, for us to be talking about, but is clearly seems to be continued to come up, but yet nothing ever comes of it. Simply, I mean, really just watching the opening statement during the congressional hearing, it's pretty profound to watch how all the information that comes out and how blatantly obvious it is that Comey lied about what happened, how Clinton got special treatment. And, you know, this shouldn't be taken as a partisan concept either. I mean, Trump, in my eyes, is just as guilty in a lot of ways. But this specific topic is so obvious, is so just blatantly on one side showing us that there's been a criminal act here. Yet for some reason, I mean, obviously there needs to be an investigation, but it's just pretty absurd to see how clear it is. And you can even see that from some of the Congress members and how just kind of flabbergasted they are this is even being discussed still. But yet it is. So that's kind of where my mind goes with this, is it always seems to be just this ongoing investigation that never really yields any results. I really hope it does. I hope this comes to fruition and we see both Comey and Clinton held accountable, as well as many others, including McCabe and all the different people involved in this nonsense, where it was very obvious they tried to take actions to manipulate the presidential election. And we have to realize this has been going on well before this election. But clearly, this is giving us an insight into how this stuff really works. But it was a lot of talk about that and about how it's just kind of ridiculous that it's still being a topic with all that we know, as well as the immigration topic and showing us how obvious it is. When this is, it's so overt and so blatant that this topic is all-consuming on all sides of the aisle, on every station, the immigration topic being bent one way or the other. But whenever we see that, whenever we see how obvious it is that this one topic is consuming everything with all the stuff going on around the world and within the United States, it just has to show us how easily people are being led down this one path. Whether you want to talk about divide and conquer, whether you want to realize that this one topic is being just grossly misrepresented by both sides from alternative media and mainstream media. There's all this manipulation taking place. And it's not to say that the immigration topic is not important. I mean, clearly there are people that are suffering here, but we have to realize how clearly this is being misrepresented and how important it is to see how aggressively people are trying to bend this discussion one way or the other. And it's really despicable. I mean, literally using the strife of these children, often lying about it, just embellishing it, or just completely, you know, bending the narrative to support one argument or the other, to achieve a political end, which is just horrific. People like Rachel Maddow crying on their show about something, discussing children in cages and how they're being forced from their families, yet knowing that this happened well before Trump was in office, whether or not he intensified it. Meanwhile, we have hundreds of thousands of children dying all around the world due to the warmongering policies that she clearly supports, yet crying on air about this one small topic. Again, admittedly an important topic, but when you look at the larger picture, it's just disgustingly hypocritical and very obvious, as Daniel McAdams on Ron Paul's show just recently called them crocodile tears, which I completely agree with. And we've seen this all before. We've seen Obama cry. We've seen all these different politicians stand up and give you this sad effort just to make you emotionally react, like I've said so many times. But a lot of that was going on yesterday and still today. And it's just important for us to see through this. Lou Kradowski did a great video talking about this, and I'll put that in the show notes for you to check out, which really just shows you a lot of and very clear points where people are using fake pictures, you know, knowingly fake incendiary pictures of like fake stage protests, but cropping them so it looks like it's something that it's not, or using pictures from the Obama years, but claiming it's from Trump, or just completely making stuff up to bend it to their narrative. Again, both on mainstream media and alt media. Drudge Report was a specific example of that, knowingly misrepresenting the pictures. It's just something we have to begin to see, and we have to be critical of everything we're looking at, from mainstream media to the alt media. I mean, it seems like it should be second nature to us today, but so many people don't want to do it. They want to just see something and be like, yes, that's what I agree with. That's what I think. Share. Without doing any due diligence. So very important today. The real point here is that they're really forcing the conversation to be about these immigrant children being detained, which is certainly sad and worthy of discourse. But like I said, while ignoring hundreds of thousands of children dying all around the world due to U.S. bombing campaigns and regularly starving to death due to U.S. imposed economic sanctions, which are designed to do exactly that. So where's their outrage involved with that? That's exactly the kind of dynamic we need to recognize and see that they're focusing on one small thing to make sure they can bend it to their political agenda. It's everything we point out. Very important. So some of the quick topics I want to run over here. Recently, the U.S. pulled out of the Human Rights Council, which again, I talked about in my interview with Vanessa Beale, is very, very revealing. But we should also note that the UN has been basically a toothless tiger for a long time now, supporting these very clear agendas, you know, feigning outrage, having no real results. But it's interesting to see the US pull out of the Human Rights Council and basically being pretty damn obvious, stating that it's because they call out Israel. I mean, bending it to make it seem like it's unfairly calling out Israel, but you know, what's more likely, that the U.S. is right and the rest of the world is wrong, or vice versa? I mean, both are possible, but very clear here that the almost unanimous perspective here outside of strict U.S. allies is that Israel is creating, carrying out some pretty gross human rights violations. But clearly, this is a pretty intense step to take, and just kind of losing any last shred of moral authority, which they keep pointing out that if they even had in the first place. And now, in addition, after leaving the Human Rights Council, the U.S. essentially is slamming all these other international human rights groups, basically saying openly, Nikki Haley's angry letter she sent out, basically clearly stating that it's their refusal to back U.S. interests why they pulled out. I mean, how much more obvious does it have to get? You're not supporting what we want to do. So we don't, it's like, you don't agree with us, so we're leaving. That's not what this is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about discourse. This is an interesting microcosm of what's going on in the entire country today. That it's not about discourse. It's not about, here's what I think, here's what you think, let's discuss some kind of middle ground. It's about, you don't agree with what I'm saying, so I'm leaving. That's exactly what we're seeing in this country today. We have to recognize that correlation. Very interesting and insightful. Another important story, which has been covered a lot, which is very revealing as well, is the recent commander in Afghanistan is openly speaking out about not leaving after 17 years, saying that where he pulling out would be a very bad idea. Really kind of saying the same thing we've been saying for 17 years, that, you know, progress is right around the corner. We're just about to get there. It's just very revealing to see this same line, clearly because there's a lot of geopolitical points that need to be made here, why the United States wants to remain in Afghanistan. There's a lot of different points to be made. One of the large ones, as we always point out, is resources. Very minimal, mineral rich, and they're very even openly talked out about saying they're going to use to start mining resources from Afghanistan to kind of counterbalance the cost they put into destroying the country, I guess. Very, very revealing. And it's also important to note that there are more extremists in Afghanistan today than when we first started the war, or rather the United States first started the war. Very revealing. So not only, again, as the point that I always make, even if their intentions were good, they're clearly failing. After 17 years of destroying that country, it's worse than when they got there. So progress is right around the corner. We always hear that. And obviously the opium aspect has to play a factor. We've seen a 90%, probably more than that now, increase in opium production since the U.S. has been there. And that goes for just about any country that grows opium that the U.S. has occupied. Immediate spike in opium production, even though it was almost completely destroyed by the Taliban just before the United States occupied Afghanistan. Big surprise. Also, very clear correlation with the opiate epidemic in this country and the rise in opium from Afghanistan. Pretty interesting there. Again, it's just very revealing that it's all about the war effort. As long as we can maintain this facade about fighting for freedom and humanitarianism, which is just a just horrific oxymoron, it's just hypocrisy, really, is the best word for it, because they're doing the exact opposite. They're hurting the very people they claim to be fighting for under this premise of helping them. It's just disgusting. But to see them state they need to stay there after 17 years of failure because it's just around the corner, it's just frustrating. The next story to talk about, another one quickly to run over, is something that I've pointed out a few times already, but we've seen this move forward, that essentially ministers in Israel have approved the bill outlawing filming of IDF troops, which I pointed out a few times in the works. I pretty much guaranteed that it was going to come to pass, and sure enough, here it is. As I understand it, they're limiting and watering down the bill, or that's still kind of in the works, but we've seen this draft law actually pass and it is going into effect, but I guess they're changing the amount of time that people can serve for filming the troops. Doesn't really make it any better, but clearly now this is designed to stop people from filming the atrocities being committed and being widely regarded as atrocities around the world in Israel. Very clear. I mean, think about if that happened here. I mean, we're already kind of seeing that happen. I recently saw an article about California and, you know, the police kind of rejecting this bill that limits their ability to use lethal force. But imagine if that happened in the United States, where we passed a bill that said, no, you cannot film what's going on here because we don't want you to see what's really happening, under the guise that you're somehow intruding on what they're trying to accomplish. Actually, we've seen bills like that try to be passed, but clearly we have a right to freedom of press and freedom of speech, which both of them are under that umbrella. So interesting to see this happen. It has to be pretty damn obvious what they're trying to cover up, because all this stuff's getting out, and the fact that they're shooting down journalists when they try to film what's going on. Pretty obvious. That's an important one for us to keep track on and really speak out about, because they're just pretty much trying to shut down the conversation, just like this concepts of labeling any kind of discussion of anything negative Israel as anti-Semitism, which is just, it's nonsense. That's not what that term even means. It's not about the state of Israel, right? I mean, we've talked about this many times over, but a very important one. Now, after all that, on to the ones from today, and there's only a few ones I want to get into, but some very important topics, one of which relates right back to the original topic. But really, it's an article from the freethoughtproject.com that really gives you an insight, not just to how there's other aspects to this immigration thing that is very important, that gets overlooked by, you know, oh, the children cry for these couple children we're seeing locked in cages, which again is not that it's not important, it's just that it's being isolated down, but also that this has been going on for well before Donald Trump in very, very dangerous, bad ways, and we just pretend that's not happening. And the article is immigrant children forcibly injected with psychotropic drugs under Obama and Trump. A federal lawsuit filing on April 23rd in an ongoing class action lawsuit revealed that immigrant children separated from their parents during both the Obama and Trump administrations, which I should note, which many people have as well, this dates well before Obama as well, back to Bush. It's something that's been ongoing and getting worse and worse, like all their policies do over the years as the next puppet in chief steps in and continues the same plan, were allegedly held down and forcibly injected with powerful psychiatric drugs while being held at the Shiloh Treatment Center, a government contractor south of Houston that houses undocumented immigrant minors, which is just horrific in the concept of that, and really has to tie us in with this concept of Big Pharma and how it's always seemingly getting its just tentacles involved in anything they can, whether we're talking about foster care or any of these concepts where they're just saying, here, while you have them under your control, pump them full of whatever drugs we can get you to buy from us. It's disgusting. The children, in sworn affidavits, described how they were told the drugs were vitamins and that they would not be allowed to see their parents or leave the facility unless they complied and took the medications. So being wildly deceptive there. I mean, they could make the argument that they have no obligation to tell them the truth. They're just, oh, it's for their best interest and we just want to, you know, but clearly there's more to it than that. One child recalled being forced to take pills, which they were told were vitamins, in the morning, at noon, and night, stating, quote, the staff told me that some of the pills were vitamins because they think I need to gain weight. The vitamins changed about two times, and each time I felt different. That's again, it's horrifying to realize that they're just pumping them up full of pills. And remember, this has to come from somewhere. There is a company profiting from this, just like the housing of them. There's companies massively profiting off of this entire endeavor. An investigation by Reveal for the Center for Investigative Reporting found that, quote, one child was prescribed 10 different shots and pills, including the antipsychotic drug Latuda, if I'm saying that correctly, Godon, and olanzapine. I'm probably mispronouncing those. The Parkinson's medication, benzotropine. Think about that. A Parkinson's medication? How is that? This stuff just really frustrates me. The seizure medications, clonazepam and Divalproex. I know I'm mispronouncing those. The nerve pain medication and antidepressant, duloxetine, and the cognition enhancer, guanfacine. I know I mispronounced that one, but think about all of these. Think about these things that they're giving these children with absolutely no understanding of their medical past or what this could cause problems with inside their bodies. That's horrifying. And clearly it's just to use these drugs for profit. I don't really see any other possible need for the drugs we just listed off, especially without understanding this kid's medical history. It's horrifying. One child described being thrown against a door and choked by a supervisor until she passed out for trying to open a window, demonstrating the aggressive nature of all of this, with clearly with these children having absolutely no rights, which as many people try to argue that the Constitution doesn't apply, there is precedent for a Constitution applying for people even outside of the United States. It gets flimsy at times. But there is precedent for that, especially when they're in the United States under U.S. federal control, very clearly. It says, quote, the supervisor told me I was going to get a medication injection to calm down. And two staff grabbed her, and the doctor then gave her an injection despite her objection and then left her on the bed. These horrific concepts have been taking place well before Donald Trump. We have to see how that's being bent to manipulate the way we see things, and more importantly, that these kind of horrific things go well beyond just the immigration aspect. We've talked about foster care and all these different ways where these, just like this, children are forced to be put on antipsychotics and all kinds of different medications. So much more to this story than we're being shown by people like Rachel Maddow and these very extremely partisan, one-sided mainstream outlets. That's very important to see. But the simple concept of them being forced these drugs, it just disgusts me. And it's something I think that one point needs to be put out much more than it's getting attention today. Moving on to the next story coming from mintpressnews.com. Civilians flee as Saudi coalition targets residential districts in Yemen's Hodeidah. So this is a topic I've talked about a lot, and it's something that continues to frustrate me when you realize that there's basically this just complete media blackout on what's going on in Yemen, with the U.S. being directly involved. These are supposed to be world news outlets, and yet they're not even discussing something that the U.S. is directly involved in, while aggressively just overtly talking about one specific topic of immigration policy. Meanwhile, we're seeing civilians and children die in much larger numbers with the U.S.'s involvement. So, you know, where's the outrage there? It's just pretty obvious that there's some manipulation going on here. Now, at least 17 civilians were killed or injured by UAE airstrikes targeting workers near the neighborhood of Yemen Mobile Round in central Hodeidah on Wednesday. Saudi-led coalition warplanes and battleships targeted several densely populated neighborhoods in Hodeidah, including southern Hodeidah and areas adjacent to the airport, killing civilians and displacing others. Over 100 airstrikes and rockets targeted Hodeidah International Airport on Tuesday and Wednesday alone. Really, this is something Vanessa Bealey recently talked about. There's an important aspect here of why they're attacking these areas, both the port and the airport, is to shut off humanitarian aid. UAE Apache attack helicopters conducted aerial attacks on schools and homes in Manzar neighborhood abutting the airport compound on Monday, forcing civilians to flee to schools inside Hodeidah. According to a mother of six who lost her husband last year after a Saudi airstrike targeted his fishing boat, quote, "We have lived in a state of terror for 3 days because of the warplanes and Apaches." While the Saudi-led coalition claims the Houthis are using Hodeidah for weapons deliveries, the U.S. Saudi-led coalition has imposed a strict blockade on the port. According to a confidential UN report, as well as interviews with humanitarian agencies, coalition ships are preventing the delivery of essential supplies, including humanitarian aid. Interesting how that contradicts what they're claiming. The Saudi-led coalition claims the port is a lucrative source of revenue for the Houthis, but Houthis deny these claims and have agreed to allow port revenue to be monitored by the United Nations if employee salaries are paid. It's just interesting to see how, I mean, this is something that goes well beyond this one specific incident, but how it's very interesting to talk about something like the humanitarian aid aspect, where they claim to be there to help these people from something, some kind of evil dictator or some intangible concept like ISIS. But the reality is, when they're claiming that they're trying to bring in weapons to the port, which apparently they themselves have blocked off so they can't bring those weapons in, which is a ridiculous contradiction, then sidestep to say, oh, but it's also lucrative revenue for these people that we think are bad. That's really what it comes down to. Meanwhile, they're saying, look, the UN come in, monitor everything. We're just simply trying to survive. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And not to say that they're not fighting back, because they absolutely are, but it's about controlling the narrative, as always. And they want this to seem like they're trying to, you know, like it's some kind of massive terrorist organization. They're trying to ship in weapons to fight them. And it's clearly not the case, especially when they're saying, anybody come in here, monitor what's happening so we can show you. But that's not what they're absolutely not going to allow that to happen. They're under this fake premise of bringing weapons through a blockade that they already are stopping even humanitarian aid from coming in. They claim that that's why they're there. And that meanwhile, hundreds of thousands of people are dying on a regular basis due to actions just like this all around the world from U.S. and Western-led actions, while we focus on a few people here in the United States. It's just very, very frustrating to see this. And as I always point out, all of it is being done in our name, in your name, with your tax dollars. So that's why they so emotionally distract you with such small things that are happening here. Again, not that they're not important, but they use things like this to emotionally distract you from what's really going on around the world and maintain the continually bloated military budget. I mean, I always point that out. There's much more than just that at play, but that's one of the largest factors and one of the easiest factors for people who are just being introduced to this information to be able to understand that we're being manipulated so we can continue to maintain these war efforts around the world under a guise of helping people, even though it's doing the exact opposite. So look over here while we do this over here. Pretty basic. We have to begin to focus on that and get that around to people who aren't aware of it. Moving on to the next story coming from ZeroHedge.com. Study confirms most psychopaths live in Washington, D.C. Psychos are drawn to power. It's not just that power corrupts, it's that already corrupt people seek power. That's a pretty basic concept they open with there, and it's very easy to wrap your mind around. And it's something that it's interesting because it always comes back to the fact that people tend to have this illusion about how prevalent psychopathy is in the world. And then really taking that to understand that most people in that position seek out positions of power. It's pretty basic. And as they say, government is the best industry for someone who has no morals. I mean, very clearly. It's a very interesting concept to understand that it's something that Titus Frost and I have discussed at length, this concept that people in power ultimately seek out these positions for fear that they will be under someone else who feels and acts the same way they do, which makes perfect sense. So they seek out the highest level of power for control. And when you understand that there's I think it's like 3-4% of people in the world that are psychopaths. And when you break down the statistics of how many people are in government positions, or rather positions of power, with that percentage, it's pretty closely correlated there. And I've seen that discussed many times in past articles, but it's interesting to understand that over time, if you realize these people have sought these positions out, it seems to correlate perfectly. So the study is called Psychopathy by State, conducted by Ryan Murphy. He surveyed samples from the lower 48 states and Washington, D.C. to find the prevalence of personality traits which correspond with psychopathy, being a psychopath. The personality traits generally corresponding with psychopathy are low neuroticism, high extroversion, low agreeableness, and low conscientiousness. Of course, DC came in first by far. I don't think any of us are very surprised by that. But as he notes, that it's not exactly a fair comparison, as it's a city being compared to entire states. The study finds that urban areas in general correspond to more psychopathy personality traits. It's very interesting. Another interesting finding is that a higher concentration of lawyers predicts higher psychopathy prevalence. Another point that I think probably wouldn't shock very many people. But it's also interesting to note on that point that we laugh at these, like, of course, that makes perfect sense, yet don't seem to take that into account when we're dealing with actually real world concepts. The joke was, you know, when's a politician lying? When their mouth is moving. It's this common running theme that we all laugh off. But then when we're actually discussing politics, we have this kind of air of ambivalence, like, oh, they're altruistic and they're all doing what's best for the country, which is very rarely the case in my experience. So it's interesting how we don't put those two together. But clearly we're seeing here that in general, in mostly general city areas, psychopathy is very high, and clearly very high in Washington, D.C. So removing D.C. and from the concept here, the states that come in top three, which is interesting, are number one is Connecticut, number two is California, number three is New Jersey, which I don't think would really surprise anybody. Interesting to understand that, though. New York actually ties for fourth with the highest concentration of psychopaths among U.S. states. Now, the least with psychopathy in their states are West Virginia, Vermont, Tennessee, North Carolina, and New Mexico. And it should also not be surprising that the main correlation was that the states with the lowest percentage of people living in urban areas also had the lowest concentration of psychopaths. Interesting. So it also seems interesting when talking about the concept of Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, drawing people into these populated areas away from the urban, rather from the, you know, the country type areas. Interesting, right? How that works out. But it's, we have to understand what this really means. And it's something we've talked about many times over, that the concept of people in power, whether you're talking about police, whether you're talking about politics, corporations, you know, the people that seem to run the world today, very high prevalence of psychopathy and just sociopathy, being a sociopath. And that's very interesting to understand and how that relates to what we're dealing with today. Think of how long this has been going on and how long that they've cultivated this atmosphere where if you're an empathetic, normal type person, you just don't fit in with that atmosphere. It seems pretty clear when we see things happening, like the Harvey Weinstein case, where it seems like very, very, a lot of people were complicit and let it go on, ignored it, likely were part of it. And yet now he's being thrown under the bus and everyone's like, oh my God, it was so terrible. But where was everybody the entire time it was happening? Everybody seemed to know about it. But that's just one small case. It happens all over the place. We have to begin to see how there's a culture of psychopathy and sociopathy in these control mechanisms. And that's very important to take away. As the author notes, perhaps psychopaths need to be around more victims or constantly switch out their friends and acquaintances as they become wise to their antisocial behaviors. Note that antisocial does not mean loner, It means lacking empathy, remorse, and behaving in a manipulative way that hurts others. It also says, but to be clear, the paper is not so much identifying where all psychopaths live as much as identifying general population traits which correspond with psychopathy. And I take that one step further and agree with his assessment of needing more victims. But like I said, I would take that to needing to find collective areas where they're all have, you know, tendencies towards psychopathy, which makes it much more comfortable when they all can just be themselves and not hide what they really are. Very interesting to understand. I think Hollywood is another perfect example, as I alluded to with the Weinstein case. But all of these control circles, to me, very clear ideas of how they've cultivated this concept over a very long period of time. Very interesting. And it also draws parallel to a concept that I saw Titus Frost recently talk on, which there was a case with a gentleman, shouldn't even call him that, with a horrific, disgusting human being. His name is Peter Scully, who is one of the absolute worst horrific pedophiles in history, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not going to get into it too much because it's a pretty horrific story of the things that he did, forced rape and just disgusting stories. He was actually arrested and going to jail, which is a fantastic story. But the concept that Titus Frost was touching on, and I'll make sure and include this in the show notes, is that the videos he was selling of just the most disgusting snuff film, 8mm type stuff from the movie 8mm, just horrific, disgusting stuff. These videos he was selling were selling for upwards of $10,000 a piece. The point he makes, which is very interesting, is who can afford something like that? Who can afford to spend $10,000 on a disgusting rape video or murdering children video? Who can afford that? Who can afford $10,000? Psychopaths in positions of power who have a lot of money to spend. I mean, that's what they always try to frame this as, these, you know, weird little occult circles, but that's not the case when you're spending $10,000 on these videos. Very interesting. I'll include that video for you to check out from Titus's, but that's a horrific story. And it's, I was going to talk about it actually, but it's just, it's a little far past for my daily concept, but it's important to look into. So I think it's a positive to see someone like this absolutely being held accountable. But like Titus points out, we need to ask why just this one man is being brought down. And clearly it's like another Weinstein concept where he's just being thrown to the wolves because we're getting hot on their trail. And there's a much larger network involved here that's just being completely ignored as this one man gets taken down. Very interesting. Moving on to the next story and the final story of the day from ZeroHedge.com, massive battle for Southwest Syria could trigger U.S.-Israeli intervention. The long-awaited battle for Daraa has begun despite repeated warnings issued to the Syrian government from the U.S. not to extend its military campaign to the country's south. Point of fact, which is its own country. And another point of fact is that that's where ISIS is. And that's they're basically openly saying, don't you go attack ISIS or we're going to attack you, pretty clearly. And this is where the conflict first began, with fierce anti-Assad protests in 2011, and then quickly spiraled into violence. The beginning point of all of this propaganda nonsense, and it's very interesting to see that as the Syrian government continues to try to take back its own sovereign territory from an illegally occupying force, they're getting threatened with attack. Very interesting and revealing. Fighting began Tuesday night as the army's elite Tiger forces assaulted an airbase in northeast Daraa, which had been under jihadist control, namely the U.S.-backed FSA Southern Force and allied Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, formerly Nusra and al-Qaeda. After liberating the base, government forces are now pounding opposition-controlled towns with artillery fire, which have for years been a hotbed of the al-Qaeda and ISIS terror insurgency. So very interesting to see how this is playing out. This is a story that I've been continuing to follow up on. And it really also, for me, ties in very heavily with all of the warnings of some kind of a false flag chemical attack. Very clearly, almost like a warning setting this up, saying that if you try to take back your own territory, if you attack our proxy army of ISIS that's occupying your territory, we're going to attack you back. And more than likely, in all of this chaos, we're going to see this next false flag be carried out, which we've seen warnings of for months now, or almost probably about a month now. So very clearly, we know what is coming. And almost in their own writing, we've seen the U.S. warning that this kind of thing is going to happen. Obviously not openly saying chemical false flag attack, but basically saying we're going to attack you if you attack ISIS. I mean, it's pretty damn clear to see how this is playing out. Very interesting. And this is a story we'll continue to follow up on. But again, all of this we talked about today, from Yemen to Syria to just any number of very important topics that are getting completely overshadowed by a very small concept of immigration policy that's been ongoing for many different administrations, but is only just now being risen to the forefront. Ask yourself why that is. Now, I want to end today by really pointing out that I deeply, truly value all of you out there supporting my work. We quickly are coming to a point today where this medium, all of our mediums through the mainstream, are being taken away from us. Whitney Webb did an excellent article today that we shared discussing this exact point, that groups like the Anti-Media, Mint Press News, admittedly larger than we are getting just losing almost 90, upwards of 90% of their traffic due to being throttled by these mainstream mechanisms. People like Facebook joining with the Atlantic Council, which we've talked about, these warmongering type entities that are shutting down any anti-establishment discussion, pointing out what's really going on around the world. And as we continue to grow, as your support continues to grow, we are also feeling that censorship, that suppression. Just, you know, whether I know can point out for sure what happened yesterday was suppression or just some kind of glitch, the point is that I'm feeling the same thing when it comes to Facebook and the website, and we're going to continue to lose this. This is going to continue to be taken away, but to some degree also means that what we're doing is working and that they're afraid of it. So they're trying to shut it down. So we should be proud of that we are making some kind of a difference, but it's important that we continue to take action where we can, when we can, and spread the truth and speak out as often as possible. Do not allow yourself to self-censor. That's what they want you to do. They want you to be afraid to speak your mind, saying that we're going to shut you down, we're going to label you, we're going to put you on that list. But we have to stand up for something like this. If we don't, we're just allowing it to take place, and we're going to further deteriorate into the authoritarian, totalitarian regime that we are very quickly becoming. And it gets under this guise of freedom. That's why people always argue, well, you have the medium, you're talking, even though it's quickly being suppressed and shut down. The point is that it's a different time today. We're in a very technological age where they can make it seem like you live, it's very similar to the John Whitehead article I recently discussed, where we're in this point where we're made to think we live in this free society, but really we're inside this enclosure where we have everything very cultivated and controlled, and it's made to make us think we're free, but we're really not. And it's very interesting concept to really, it's hard for people to put their minds around, but that's what we're experiencing. So as the censorship continues to increase, make sure you get out there and support the independent media that you believe in, be that the Last American Vagabond or the Anti-Media or the Free Thought Project or Mint Press News or James Corbett or any number of great people, Vanessa Beale, Eva Bartlett, all these different people we've worked with in the past. But get out there and support them and find ways to spread the truth in any possible way that you can, be that on Steemit or DTube or BitChute or any of these new outlets. The point is we have to begin to create change in the small ways that we can on a daily basis. Otherwise, what are we doing this for? For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.